You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 232 by Rudolf Steiner, 14 lectures translated by Pauline Werla, entitled Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers. This is Lecture 8, entitled The Nature of the Hibernian Mysteries. You will have seen that initiation in the Hibernian Mysteries, as I described them yesterday, aimed to give real insight into the secrets of cosmic and human existence, for the inner experiences I had to tell you about had a very powerful effect on the life of the soul. Everything leading along the path into the spiritual world depends on whether a human being makes certain conquests as a result of particularly drastic inner experiences, and in so doing increases his forces to such an extent that in one way or another he succeeds in penetrating into that world. We heard that in the process of initiation in Hibernia, the pupil confronted two symbolic statues, but the word symbolic must not be misunderstood. I described to you how these statues were constructed and also what feelings and inner experiences were undergone by the pupils while contemplating them. You must realize that the direct impression made by such majestic statues, under the conditions I described, had an infinitely more powerful effect on the inner being of the pupils than one receives from your description. Therefore, after the pupils had lived through everything of which I spoke yesterday, it became possible for the initiators to produce in them echoes of what they had experienced in connection with each of the statues, and these echoes continued to resound for weeks or even longer, or in some cases shorter, the time span varying according to the karma of the individual concerned. Having done the test on both statues, for what went forth from both statues together was intended to work on in the further soul life of the pupil as a combined impression, the pupil was, nevertheless, now urged to let the impression from the male statue reverberate very powerfully within him. And I will now describe to you the way this impression reverberated. But one has, of course, to use words that are not really suitable for depicting initiation experiences, and the inner meaning of some of the things I am putting into words will have to be felt intuitively. What the pupil now experienced when he gave himself up to the impression of the male statue was a kind of soul rigidity, a rigid numbness of the soul, which set in with greater and greater intensity the more he was bidden to let the echo persist. It was a soul rigidity which felt also like a bodily rigidity. In the intervening periods, the pupil was able to attend to all the necessities of life, but time and again his soul was transported back to this echo, and he again experienced rigidity. This was a type of initiation which was very strongly, even if not totally reminiscent, of the old style of the original mysteries. And now this rigidity caused a change in the pupil's consciousness. One could not say that the consciousness was in any way dulled, but the pupil had the feeling, quote, "This state of consciousness in which I find myself is totally unfamiliar to me. At the moment I cannot handle it. I do not know how to deal with it," close quote. So that all the pupil felt was that his whole consciousness was entirely filled with the sensation of rigidity. At that point, it was as though the pupil felt that what was rigid in him, namely he himself, was being taken up into the cosmos. He felt as if he were being transported into the far spaces of the cosmos. And he could say to himself, quote, "The cosmos is receiving me," close quote. Then something very special happened. His consciousness was not extinguished, but it became somewhat different. When this experience of numbness and of being received by the cosmos had lasted for a sufficient length of time, and this was ensured by the initiators, the pupil said something like this to himself, quote, "The rays of the sun and the stars are drawing me out into the cosmos, but, nevertheless, I am remaining within myself." Close quote. When this experience had lasted long enough, a remarkable vista presented itself. Now, for the first time, the pupil realized the purpose of this state of consciousness which had set in during the numbness. For now, all according to his experiences and their echoes, there came to him all manner of impressions of winter landscapes. Winter landscapes were there in the spirit before him, landscapes in which he saw whirling snowflakes filling the air. As I said, he saw all this in the spirit. Or landscapes in which he looked at things such as forests, with snow weighing down the branches of the trees. Things which absolutely reminded him of what he had seen here or there in his everyday life, but which always gave the impression of reality. So that after being transported into the cosmos, he felt as though his own consciousness was conjuring up before him whole excursions in time through winter landscapes. And during this experience, he felt as if he were not actually in his body, but certainly in his sense organs. He felt that he was living with the whole of his being in his eyes, in his ears, also on the surface of his skin. And then, when his whole sense of feeling and of touch seemed to be spread out over his skin, he also felt, quote, "I have become like the statue that is elastic but hollow," close quote. And he felt, for instance, that his eyes had an inner connection with these landscapes. He felt as though this whole landscape he was looking at was active in each eye, as though the eye were an inner mirror reflecting everything outside him. And further, he did not feel himself as a unity, but felt his ego multiplied to the number of his senses, namely, 12-fold. And from the feeling that his ego had become 12-fold, a remarkable experience caused him to say to himself, quote, "There is an ego which looks through my eyes. There is an ego which works in my sense of thought, in my sense of speech, in my sense of touch, in my sense of life. I am actually scattered over the world." Close quote. From this experience there arose an intense longing for union with the being of the hierarchy of the Angeloi, in order that from this union strength and power might be acquired for mastering the splitting of the ego into the single sense experiences. And out of all this the question arose in the ego, quote, "Why do I have my senses?" Close quote. And this led to the quite remarkable result that the pupil now felt that everything connected with the senses and with their continuation inward toward the inner organism was related to the real environment around him on earth. The senses belong to the winter. That is what the pupil felt. And this whole life through which he was passing, in which the changing winter landscapes tallied, as I said, with what he had seen in everyday life, yet which, because they were spiritual, shone for him in great splendor. All these experiences led the pupil to an overall soul response consisting more or less of the following. Quote, "In my mystery winter experiences, I have passed through aspects of the cosmos that now really belong to the past. The snow and ice of my enchanted winter have shown me what death-dealing forces there are in the cosmos. I now know of the destructive impulses there. And my numbness prior to my mystery winter experiences was the intimation that I was to behold those forces in the cosmos which come over from the past into the present, but in the present are dead cosmic forces." Close quote. This realization was what the reverberation of his experiences with the male statue conveyed to the pupil. Then he was brought to the point where his experiences with the pliable, not the elastic, statue could echo within him. And now he did not succumb to an inner rigidity, but to an inner heat, a feverish condition of the soul, which began with bodily symptoms. It felt like intense pressure inside him, as though everything was under pressure, his breathing and also the blood throughout his body. He felt extreme anxiety. In fact, he was in deep mental distress. And this state brought home to him the second thing he would have to go through. Out of his mental distress, there arose in him the realization which can be described more or less as follows. Quote, I have within me something that my bodily nature demands in my ordinary earthly life. This must be overcome. My earth ego must be overcome. Close quote. This conviction lived strongly in the pupil's consciousness. Then when the experience of this inner fever, this mental distress, this feeling that the earthly ego had to be overcome, had lasted for the necessary length of time, something arose in the pupil which he knew was not his previous state of consciousness, but a state well known to him, namely, dream consciousness. Whereas from the earlier numbness had come the distinct feeling that he was in a state of consciousness unknown to him in ordinary life, he knew now that his consciousness was a kind of dreaming. He dreamed, but in contrast to what he had dreamt before, although in harmony with what he had experienced, this time it was of the most wonderful summer landscapes. However, now he knew that these were dreams, dreams which filled him with intense joy or intense sadness, depending on whether what came to him from the being of summer was sad or joyful. But in either case, with the intensity of feeling accompanying dreams. You need only remind yourselves of how a dream can affect you. It takes the form of pictures, but you may wake up out of it with a palpitating heart, hot and frightened. The pupil interpreted this intensity of feeling in an elementary and straightforward way, saying to himself, quote, my inner being has brought the summer to my consciousness as a dream. The summer has come to me as a dream. Close quote. At the same time, the pupil knew that what appeared to his consciousness in a state of continual change, like an enchanted summer, was indicative of impulses leading into the far future of the cosmos. But now he did not, as he previously did, feel as though he were divided up into his separate senses and multiplied. On the contrary, he now felt himself to be completely gathered together inside himself as an individual being. He felt as though pulled together in his heart. And the culmination, the supreme climax of what he was experiencing, was this sense of being held together in his heart, this being in full possession of himself and of being inwardly united with the dream of summer, not with the summer as outwardly seen, but with the dream of it. And the pupil said to himself rightly, quote, in what the dream of summer reveals, and I experience in my own being, lies the future. Close quote. The next experience arising in the pupil was of these two conditions following one another. He was looking, shall we say, into a landscape of meadows and ponds and little lakes. Then came a vista of ice and snow, which changed into whirling, falling snow, into a mist of falling snowflakes. Then this mist became more and more evanescent, and finally faded into nothingness. And the moment this happened, when he felt himself, as it were, in empty space, at that moment the summer dreams replaced the winter scenes, and he realized in full consciousness, quote, now past and future are encountering one another in my own life of soul. Close quote. From then onward, the pupil had learned to look at the outer world and to be able to say of it, as of a truth that was to remain with him for all future time, quote, in this world which surrounds us, in this world from which we derive our corporeality, something is perpetually dying. And the snow crystals of winter are the outer signs of the spirit that is perpetually dying in matter. As human beings, we are not yet capable of feeling completely this dying spirit, which in external nature is correctly symbolized in snow and ice, unless initiation has been achieved. But through initiation we know that the spirit is constantly dying in matter, announcing this in the process of rigidification in nature. A void is continually being produced. And what is born out of this void is to begin with something resembling the dreams of nature. And the dreams of nature contain the seeds for the future of worlds. But the death of worlds and the birth of worlds would not have a meeting point if the human being were not midway between them. Close quote. For if the human being were not there in the middle, as I said, I am simply relating to you the experiences inwardly undergone by the pupils of the Hibernian initiation. If no human being were there between them, the real processes revealed through a new consciousness born of the state of numbness would be an actual death of worlds with no dream to follow. No future would arise to complement the past. Saturn, Sun, Moon, and Earth would be there, but no Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan. For this cosmic future to unite with the past, the human being had to be there between the past and the future. The pupil knew this simply through what he experienced. All that the pupil had just experienced was then summarized by his initiators. The first condition, that of rigidity, when the pupil had felt himself as though sucked up into the cosmos, was summarized for him by his initiators in words which I can render to you in the following way, quote, "In the wide expanses, learn how in the breadths of ether blue, world being has to disappear to find itself again in you," close quote. These words were a summary of the actual feelings the pupil had experienced, the feelings accompanying the conditions brought about by the second statue were summarized as follows, quote, "In your inmost depths discover how true wisdom must be found out of evil's fevered heat, and through yourself its being ground," close quote. Remember, my dear friends, that at the stage I spoke about at the end of the lecture yesterday, as the pupil was being released, the words science and art appeared in the place of the two statues. The word science appeared in the place of the statue that had said, quote, "I am knowledge, but what I am is not real being," close quote. And the word art stood in the place of the statue that had said, quote, "I am fantasy, but what I am has no truth," close quote. The pupil had known all the terrible heaviness of heart resulting from his soul having greedily desired something other than real knowledge. For he now clearly realized that the knowledge acquired on earth consists only of ideas. It is only of a picture nature and has no actual existence. Now he lived through the reverberations of this experience and had come to realize that the human being himself must find being for the content of his knowledge by losing himself in the expanses of the cosmos. Quote, "In the wide expanses, learn how in the breaths of ether blue, world being has to disappear to find itself again in you," close quote. For this was indeed the feeling. A human being rushes out, as it were, into the breaths of ether, which are bounded by the blue of the wide expanses, and ultimately unites himself with this blue of the far distances. But out there, what used to be earth is as though transformed into nothingness. And he had learned to experience this nothingness by beholding the magical winter landscapes. And now he knows that it is only the human being who can stand firm in the infinite expanse leading to the blue of ether distances. Through the second experience, the human being realizes that he finds in the depths of his own being what he must overcome, what he must recognize as evil, rooted and surging within him, and which has to be overcome through the impulse of good in human nature, so that the world may have a future. Quote, "In your inmost depths, discover how true wisdom must be found out of evil's fevered heat, and through yourself its being ground. Close quote. The pupil had experienced that imagination has an inclination to avoid truth, to be satisfied with a relation to the world consisting of arbitrary, subjective pictures. But now, out of the dreamlike, magical summer experience, he had acquired insight that enabled him to say, quote, "Whatever arises in me as creative imagination, I can carry out into the world. Out of my inner being, fantasy pictures grow the true imaginations of the plants. If I have the pictures of fantasy only, then I am a stranger to what is around me. But if I have imaginations, then there grows out of my own inner self the things I can find in this plant and that one, in this and that animal, in one human being and another. Whatever I find in my own being coincides with something outside. And for everything I meet with in the outer world, I can find something connected with it rising up out of the depths of my own soul being." Close quote. This sense of a twofold union with the world was an experience which, accompanied by a feeling of inner triumph, came to the pupil as an echo of the experiences connected with the two statues. And the pupil had in this way really learned, on the one side, may I say, to expand his soul spiritually into the cosmos, and on the other side to penetrate deeply into a region of his inner being where the forces are not working in the feeble way customary in everyday consciousness, but as though they were being stirred to their very depths by the half-reality of magical dreams. The pupil had now learned to balance this intensity of inner impulses with the intensity of outer impulses. Out of his relationship to the winter landscape on the one hand and the summer landscape on the other, enlightenment had come to him concerning external nature and his own self, and he had become deeply and intimately related to both. He was then well prepared to go through a kind of recapitulation. In this recapitulation, his initiators put it very clearly to him, quote, "While you are experiencing numbness, you must make a deliberate pause, and you must do this again in the course of going out into cosmic expanses. And for a third time, while you are feeling as though you are being poured into your senses and multiplied, you must become inwardly conscious of what each condition is like, and be able to distinguish clearly between them. You must have an inner, etheric experience of each of these three conditions." Close quote. And when the pupil, now with full consciousness, called up again before his soul the state of numbness, there appeared before him the kind of experience he had had before he came down to the earth out of spiritual worlds, before the earthly conception of his body, when he was drawing together out of the cosmos etheric impulses and forces in order to clothe himself with an etheric body. In this way, the pupil of the Hibernian Mysteries was brought to experience the final stage preceding his descent into a physical body. He had then to become fully aware of the inner experience of being transported out into the world expanses. This time, in the recapitulation, he did not feel as though he were being drawn up by the rays of the sun and the stars, but as though something were coming toward him, as though from all sides the hierarchies were coming toward him from the wide expanses, and as though other experiences were also coming toward him. And he became aware of conditions lying farther back in his pre-earthly life. Then he had consciously to recapitulate the experience of being poured out into his senses and dispersed in fragments in the world of the senses. This brought him to the middle point of his existence between death and a new life. You can see from these indications that the entry of the initiated one into these hidden worlds, worlds to which humanity, even so, belongs, can come about in the most diverse ways. And from the indications given yesterday and on many other occasions, you will realize, too, that vision of the supersensible world was achieved by methods differing widely in the several mysteries. In later lectures, we shall speak of why it was that such differences were considered appropriate, and why a uniform spiritual path was not adopted in all the mysteries. Today, I will merely mention the fact. But the purpose of all these different paths was to unveil the hidden aspects of world existence and human existence, which have been indicated again and again in our present studies, as well as in other lectures and writings. The pupil was then told that he must also recapitulate clearly and get a feeling knowledge of the separate stages of the other conditions he had experienced as after-effects of the other statue, and each condition was to be evoked in full consciousness. He carried out these instructions, and in recapitulating the state I described as a kind of soul distress, he had a direct feeling of the after-death experiences in the life of the soul. Then, in his further experiences, he saw a vista of outer nature appearing as a summer landscape, yet as in a dream. As he recapitulated this experience and consciously distinguished it from the other, knowledge came to him of the further course of his life after death. And when he was able to make really alive and present the experience of contracting in his heart nature, he was able to reach as far as the middle point of existence between death and a new life. Then the initiator could say to him, quote, "Learn in the spirit to perceive the winter, and you will behold pre-earthly life. Learn in the spirit to dream the summer, and you will experience life after death." Close quote. Please note carefully the words I have used, for in the relationship between beholding, in quotes, pre-earthly life, and experiencing, in quotes, life after death, and between dreaming, in quotes, and perceiving, in quotes, lies the tremendous difference between the two experiences had by the candidate for initiation in the mysteries of Hibernia. The place of this initiation in the whole historic setting of human evolution, its significance in the evolutionary process, and in what way a deeper meaning was indicated when, at that stage of initiation which I described yesterday, something like a vision of the Christ came to the pupil of the Hibernian mysteries, of these things I shall speak tomorrow. The end of Lecture 8.